right. Good evening, everyone. So let's begin. So tonight we find ourselves, this week we find ourselves in Parshas Vayishlach. So there's much to discuss in Parshas Vayishlach, but I want to draw your attention actually to one of the most important episodes that begins at the beginning of the parasha. So the Torah says the following, look at number one. Vayakam balayla hahu, he got up in that night. Vayikach es shtei nashav ve'eshtei shivchosav ve'esachad asar yiladov. Vayavor es ma'avar yavok. So remember, give us a little bit of context. Yaakov Avinu has spent the last number of years living by the house of Laban. At this point in time now, he's married, four wives, total of 11 children. 12 children, 11 sons, one daughter. He's now making his entry, his entrance back into Canaan. And of course, as he's crossing into Canaan, he gets word that his brother Esau is coming to meet him with 400 men. Yaakov, you know, of course, has absolutely no idea what to expect. And so Chazal tells us that he prepares himself in three different ways. He prays, he sends a gift to Esau in a hope to perhaps diffuse some of the animosity, and he goes ahead and he prepares for war. So this is the night before the fateful encounter. So the Torah tells us he wakes up in the middle of the night and he crosses everyone over Ma'avar Yavok. If you ever drive down the Jordan Valley Road in Eretz Yisrael, so you can see, there's literally a sign, I don't know if it's the same one, but there's a sign that says Ma'avar Yavok, Yavok Crossing. I don't know if that's the exact one that Yaakov Avinu used, but again, you can see general area where Yaakov Avinu came across the Yarden. So what happens? So you can imagine the scene. Yaakov Avinu is crossing over the river, and he's crossing his entire family and all of his belongings. Yaakov Avinu is left all alone. A man began to struggle with him. Ad alos hashachar, until the morning. Vayar kilo yacholo, so he saw, this man saw, this ish, this mysterious ish saw, that he was unable to go ahead and overtake Yaakov. So what happens? Vayiga bekaf yerecho, vateka kaf yerech Yaakov behe'afko imo. So the Torah says, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip became dislocated as he wrestled with him. So he injured Yaakov by the hip thigh area. What happens? Vayomer. So Yaakov Avinu still stands his ground. Vayomer shalchini ki alo ashachar. Vayomer lo ashalechacha kim berachtani. This mysterious ish. We still don't know who the ish is. The ish says to Yaakov, let me go. The dawn has arisen. Let me go. And Yaakov Avinu says, I will not let you go until you bless you. Vayomer lo mashmecha. So the ish says to Yaakov, what is your name? Vayomer Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov ye'amra od shimcha. Kiyim Yisrael. No, your name's not Yaakov anymore. Rather, your name is Yisrael. Ki sarisa im Elokim v'im anashim v'atuchal. For you have contended with God, you have contended with man, and you have overcome. Vayishal Yaakov ayomer hagida nashmecha. Yaakov says to Ish, tell me, Ish, what is your name? Vayomer lama zeh tishal l'shmi. Don't ask my name. Or why do you ask my name? Vayivarech oso sham. And the Ish blessed him there. Section ends. Vayizrach lo, I'm sorry, Vayikra Yaakov Shem Hamakom Piniel. Yaakov named this place where this struggle took place Piniel. Kira Isi Elokim Panim El Panim Vatinatzel Nafshi. I saw God face to face. I literally came face to face with God and I was saved. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh Kasher Avaras Pinuel. So the sun came up as Yaakov Avinu was standing in this place that he just named in Pinuel. Vuhu Solea Al Yerecho. And what's happening with Yaakov Avinu? He's limping. He's limping on his leg. He's limping as a result of his injured thigh. Therefore, the Pasuk says, last Pasuk in the section, Lamed Gimel 33, Al Kain Lo Yochlu B'nei Yisrael Esgid Hanosha Asher Akaf HaYerech HaDayom Hazeh. Therefore, the Jewish people shall not eat the Gid Hanosha, which we will translate as the sciatic nerve, until this very day, asher akaf hayarech, that is on the socket of the hip, kinoga bekaf yarech Yaakov begit hanosha. For Yaakov Avinu was injured on the hip in the sciatic nerve, and therefore we do not eat it until this very day. So I'd like to try to explore tonight this very simple question, which is, what is the symbolism of this gid hanosha? So This is intriguing for a variety of different reasons. It's intriguing because in general, we do not find binding commandments from events that occur before Sinaitic revelation. For example, so we do Bris Milah today. Why do we do circumcision? Why? So answer number one is because Avraham Avinu did it. But the truth is, that's not the reason. The reason we do it is because the Torah in Parshas Tazria says, which is in Vayikra, Bayom Hashmini Yimol Bisar Arloso. Because on the eighth day, child will be circumcised. Why did God have to repeat the commandment of circumcision if we learned it from Avraham Avinu? And the answer is because we don't learn binding biblical law, bless you, from events that occurred before Matan Torah. What the Gemara calls Ein Lemeidin Davar Mikodem Har Sinai. Very important klal. Git Hanosha might actually be the one exception to that rule, because according to most opinions, Git Hanosha is not restated in the Torah. But leaving that piece aside, the question is, what's happening over here? If you just think about the episode for just a moment, Yaakov has a struggle. The struggle itself is strange because we don't even know who the ish is, although we'll come to that later. But here, Yaakov is injured, and the Torah is telling us that because Yaakov was injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore what? We don't eat the sciatic nerve. What does Yaakov Avinu getting injured in the sciatic nerve mean? Understand what this means. Because Yaakov Avinu suffered an injury, therefore we don't eat it. What does one thing have to do with the other? What's the symbolism that the Torah is trying to convey? So just interestingly enough, that this, just, and this will be important as we go on a little bit, the sciatic nerve is the longest, widest nerve that exists within the human body. Right? It extends from the lower back and goes all the way down through the foot. So it's interesting that Yaakov Avinu, when he's injured, and we're going to see the symbolism in that, when he's injured by the malach, or should say the ish, the man doesn't just injure him in any random way, but it almost appears that the ish targets him in a very dramatic fashion. And therefore, again, the Torah tells us, because of the dramatic fashion of the injury, therefore we don't need to get anasha. What is the symbolism of this prohibition? So I want to share with you a couple of different ideas. If you take a look at number two, so the Radak says, Al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael. So Radak says, you know what happened over here? B'nei Yaakov asru al atzman lekavod avihem. So it's interesting. So Radak says, God never commanded us not to eat the sciatic nerve. So where did this come from? These were the sons of Yaakov took this upon themselves out of deference to their father. V'heim tzivu libneihem, and their sons commanded their sons, and so on and so forth. V'ne'asar lahem ulibneihem ulibneihem ad olam. So this is amazing. So Radak says, the truth is, what's the connection between Yaakov's injury and the prohibition to eat the sagna of the Gid Anasha? So Radak will say, maybe nothing, except for the simple fact that what? That the children of Yaakov voluntarily took this upon themselves. They decided, and we'll discuss why that is, but they decided out of deference and honor to their father. Our father was injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore, out of cover for our father, we will not eat this piece of the animal. That's interesting, but it still doesn't tell us the why. It still doesn't help us understand. So why did they, if they want to memorialize their father's struggle, there are so many ways they could have done that other than refraining from eating the sciatic nerve. So let's take it a step further. Number three, the Chizkuni. So the Chizkuni writes, Al Kain Shehuzak Yaakov Begit Hanasha Kiblu Aleim Banav Mishum Ve'elech Sheyoloch Lumimenu. So the Chizkuni says, the truth is that the offspring of Yaakov Avinu, his sons, were trying to almost memorialize his pain, memorialize his injury, so that they should always remember the father's injury that he endured in the struggle with the Ish, therefore they don't eat the Gid Hanasha. Okay, the Rashbam in number four says it a little bit differently. The Rashbam writes, Al kein lo yochlu lezikaron givuroso shel Yaakov. Listen to this. So the Chizkuni says that we don't eat the Gid Hanasha. Why? To remember what? The pain of Yaakov. The Rashbam says we don't eat the Gid Hanasha. Why? To remember not the pain of Yaakov, but just the opposite. The strength of Yaakov. Lezikron givuroso shel Yaakov. So the Chizkuni says we don't eat the Gid Hanasha to remember Yaakov Avinu's pain, to remember his injury. The Rashbam, we don't eat the Gidanash in order to remember Yaakov Avinu's incredible success, that he stood his ground against this ish. If you look at number 5 again, the Chizkuni states again, Al kein lo yochlu kimo v'hu lo kein yidame. Kilomar, bidinu, listen to this Chizkuni, this is very interesting. Bidinu, sheyesh liknos v'le'enosh b'nei Yisrael me'achilas Gidanasha. So the truth is, the Chizkuni says that one can make the argument that the prohibition to eat the Gidanasha is a punitive measure. It's a punishment against the Jewish people. What's the punishment for? He says, "Sheenichu es avihem holich yechidi kedichsiv vayivaser Yaakov levado." So the Chizkuni says something amazing. The Chizkuni says, "How could it be that Yaakov Avinu was alone? Yaakov Avinu had 11 grown sons." Not grown, but old enough that they should know that what? You don't leave. Why is Yaakov schlepping? Right, according to Rashi, remember again, Yaakov is moving luggage from one side of the yard to the other side of the yard. And that's why he was alone. Says the Chizkuni, why is he alone? Where are the kids? Where are the sons? Where is the family to help the patriarch? He says, V'hein hayu giborim. The sons were strong. They should have been there to help their father, to assist him. They did not accompany their father. And because he was left alone, that's why he was injured. This is very interesting, Chizkuni. So the Chizkuni understands over here the following idea. The Chizkuni explains that essentially not eating the Gid Anasha is a punishment. More of a punishment. Why? Because the children left their father alone. And therefore we abstain for all future generations from eating the Gid Anasha. And what's the take-home message? What's the take-home message of not eating the Gid Anasha? No Jew left behind. That is the message of Gid Hanasha. You want to know why we don't eat the Gid Hanasha? Because Yaakov was injured in the sciatic nerve. Why was Yaakov injured in the sciatic nerve? Because he was left alone. Because his family did not look out for him. And therefore, again, the sons of Yaakov, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, decided to institutionalize this practice of not eating the Gid Hanasha, said we should always be reminded that we must constantly and perpetually look out for one another. We cannot assume that everyone is going to be able to keep up with the camp. We cannot assume that everyone is capable for looking after themselves. We must always be ever vigilant and ever aware of the needs of the situations of the other and make sure that no one is left behind. So now you see something very interesting unfolding over here. So now again, if we just even take what we've seen until now, so we see the Radak on one hand telling us that the sons of Yaakov didn't need to get Hanasha, out of covet for their father. Somehow again, by abstaining from eating the sciatic nerve in which Yaakov was injured, that was their demonstration of covet for their father. Chizkuni, because their father was injured, therefore they felt it proper to abstain from eating that sciatic nerve. Rashbam, as a memorial, an eternal memorial to the strength of Yaakov, they did not eat the Gid Hanasha. And the Chizkuni, almost like as a knas, as a penalty, as a reminder for their mistake in their behavior that they left their father alone, therefore we don't eat the Gid Hanasha. Comes on the Sefer Achinuch, and the Sefer Achinuch switches it a little bit, because up until now, the common denominator of all the opinions we quoted is that everyone is focused really on the direct reaction. It's really, this is all based on the family's reaction to what happened to Yaakov. The Sefer Achinuch changes this a little bit, and he says like this, Mishroshe mitzvah zu. It would appear that at the essence of this mitzvah, kidei shetiyah remez liYisrael, she'af api sheyispulu tzaros rabos begalios. Remember, the Sefer Achinuch is going with this idea that the struggle with the ish. Who is the ish? I mean, we'll define this more later on. But actually, we don't begin to this. That the Jewish people will have incredible struggles in the diaspora. Miyad ha'amim, in the hands of the nations, umiyad b'nei Esav. The Sefer Achinuch says, if there is one thing that the diaspora Jew must always remember, it's that no matter how difficult or terrible things become, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. The Jewish people will never perish. The Jewish people will never succumb. The Jewish people will never be broken. We could be hurt. We could be hurt, we could be injured, we could be maimed, we could chas v'shalom be murdered, but we could never be broken. You will never abolish, you will never go ahead and decimate the Jewish people. He says, Ela li'olam ya'amot v'zarem v'shamim, v'yavo lahem gov yigalem yatzar, and one day the Redeemer will come, Mashiach, and Mashiach will redeem us. U'bezichram tamit inyon zeh, ayyedeh ha'mitzvah shetiyel zikaro, ya'amdu be'emunasa b'tzitkasam li'olam. But you know, sometimes there are certain things that we know to be theologically true, but it's helpful for us to have some type of physical reminder of this spiritual reality. Therefore, says the Sefer Achinuch, he says, "Beremez zeh hu lefi she'oso malach shenilcham im Yaakov Avinu." Who is this ish who went to battle with Yaakov? Who was he? Sheba b'kabbalah shayasaro shel Esav. Again, we have based, we'll discuss this more in depth in just a little bit, but the tradition is that it was the ministering angel of Esav. Rotza la'akro li'Yaakov min ha'olam. What did the Ish want to do on the night before the fateful encounter? He wanted to destroy Yaakov. And what happened? V'lo yacholo. But amazing enough, the angel, the Sar Shel Esav, the ministering angel of Esav, was unable to go ahead and destroy, to vanquish Yaakov. V'tziaro b'negiyas ha'yarach. But what was the Ish able to do? The Ish was not able to destroy, but the Ish was able to inflict pain. So the Sar Shel Esav, the ministering angel of Esav, which represents the nations of the world, was not able to bring Yaakov to his knees, was not able to break Yaakov, was not able to destroy Yaakov, was not able to kill Yaakov, but he was able to injure Yaakov. And says the Sefer HaChinuch something amazing. He says, V'chein Zera Esav mitzair lezera Yaakov. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, the story that we read in number one is a historic, is a metaphorical foreshadow for the nature of our lives in the diaspora. What happens? Esav attacks us. Esav hurts us. Ulibasovs, and what happens? Esav injures us. And after our encounter with Esav, we're very often left what? We're left what? We're left limping. We're left limping. We're left injured. We're left maimed. We're left handicapped. It hurts. He pains us. But what happens? Ulibasov, tielohem Yeshua mehem. But at the end of the day, there will be salvation. Kimoshe matzinu ba'av, shezarcha lo hashemesh lirifuaso. Sefer HaKinah says so beautifully. What happened at the end of the episode? Remember again, Yaakov stands his ground. And what happens? What does the Torah say? The sun came up. The dawn broke over the horizon. Says the Sefer HaKinah, that is much more than just a statement about daytime arriving. That dawn breaking is an incredible metaphor to salvation. Esav struggles with us. Esav wrestles with us. Esav injures us. Esav hurts us. But you know what the amazing part is? We remain standing. And it's true that Esav hurts us and we walk away from the encounter with Esav a little bit broken and a little bit injured. But the amazing part that we believe is the sun will come up. Salvation will arrive. Kein yizrach lanu ha-shemesh shal Mashiach. So too the son of Mashiach should arise. Not S-O-N of Mashiach, S-U-N of Mashiach. Right, the son of, right, you came to the right class. Right, so the son of Mashiach, the light of Mashiach, should ultimately rise. And he will heal us from our suffering and redeem us. Amen b'mehira b'yameinu. Such a beautiful Sefer HaChinuch. So now this is a fundamental shift. Because remember, up until now, in sources 2 through 5, all the different interpretations we saw about the prohibition of Gidah Nosha are directly all related to the actual occurrence with Yaakov. See, either the sons of Yaakov abstain from eating the Gidah Nosha out of honor for their father, honor for his victory, honor for his pain, because they felt bad, a reminder, they left him alone. We can't leave anyone behind. We must always be looking out for each other. Sefer HaChinuch says, no, there's something much bigger unfolding over here. This encounter between Yaakov and the mysterious Ish is a historical foreshadow, a metaphorical foreshadow for the nature of the condition of the Jewish people, the sons of Yaakov, that we will find ourselves all alone at night. We will find ourselves in difficult circumstances. We'll find ourselves vulnerable. And what happens when we're vulnerable? The Ish, representing the nations of the world, attack us. and wrestle us and try to break us and bring us to our knees, but we keep our ground. We maintain our ground. We remain standing, but we get injured. We get hurt, but it's okay. Because as long as we remain standing, there's one thing we know, is that the next morning, the sun will come up. That morning, we've been waiting for that morning for over 2,000 years. But despite the fact that it's been 2,000 years in waiting, it doesn't take away any little bit of our optimism that that sun may, Emir Tashem, still come up, God willing, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, we believe it, it's going to be the next day. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's what's unfolding. So we don't eat the Gid Hanasha. Why? Why don't we eat the Gid Hanasha? To remind us, not just of Yaakov Avinu's struggle, but to remind us of the historical struggle of the Jewish people. That even when we're injured, we remain standing, we hold our ground, and we believe that the sun will come up. Now, it's interesting. If you look at number 7, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in his Sefer Drash Moshe, asks a very interesting question. So he says, he asks like this. He says, Alkim lo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael skid anasha, sarich lahavin, ma shehizkir lahanes Yaakov, shenitzach es hamalach, v'hu b'isir achila digid hanasha, shehu b'shev yaltasa, hefech mikol anisim, shehuzkar hu b'masa. So Rav Moshe asks such an interesting question. He says, we have many mitzvos that are there to commemorate miracles, right? What's an example of a mitzvah we do to commemorate a miracle? Matzah, right? Chanukah, I know everybody's in the mood for Chanukah. But Chanukah is rabbinic, right? Biblically, matzah. Matzah, we eat matzah every single, to remember the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. So Rav Moshe says, generally, when we commemorate miracles, we commemorate miracles with positive, dynamic action. We don't commemorate miracles by not doing something. For example, even on Pesach, where we have a prohibition of not eating chametz, but again, not eating chametz is only the other side of the coin of the positive commandment, tit matzah. So it says to Moshe, I don't understand. If we are supposed to commemorate the miracle that we are able, that Yaakov stood his ground against the mysterious Ish, and therefore we are able to stand our ground in our challenges as well against the nations of the world, why do we commemorate that miracle with a passive act, not eating the Gid Hanasha? Why wouldn't we commemorate that miracle somehow through some positive dynamic activity? And Moshe says something amazing. He says, I'm in number 7, 5 lines in, right after the period, the middle of the line. V'ulai mishum sha'af shalamo benis benisyonas agalos, hu davar gadol ma'od, v'yesh schar har be'azeh, because even though it is something amazing to be able to remain standing, despite all of the difficulties and trials, tribulations, and vicissitudes of the diaspora, nevertheless, and we have a lot of schar because of it, aval yoser hayinu rotzim shelo yizdamein lanu nisyonos. Rav Moshe said, you know what? You know what's even better than remaining standing when you get attacked by the nations of the world? What's even better? What's even better is not being attacked at all. Right? What's even better is being able to live without the nisyonos. What's even better is being able to live without the challenges. He says, "Kimo she'tiknu l'spal b'chol yom be'berchas ha'shachar." We say this every morning in davening. Shelo novo lidei nisayon. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, I'm going to ask you to give me the strength to meet my challenges, but I'm going to do one better. Maybe don't bring me to a state of challenge. Maybe help me escape the challenges altogether. V'chein einenu rotzim begalus. We don't want to be in the diaspora that ultimately brings us to incredible challenges. We dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day to redeem us. Therefore, the way we commemorate our ability to always withstand the trials and tribulations of diaspora is not through some type of positive commandment, but rather by a shevi al tasa, something passive. Why? What does that show? Lahoros she'af she'inyon gadol ma'otu. Even though it's an incredible thing to be able to stand your ground and withstand your challenges, ein anu rotzim baza. The truth is, if you ask me if I have a choice between standing my ground and standing up to my challenges versus not having the challenges at all, I'd much rather not have the challenges. Kedamar al yisurin lohein velo scharan, afshim mizdami tzarech lekal ba'avas. So Moshe says something truly beautiful. So if you bring this all together, what we have over here is an incredible national meaning for this mitzvah. That the prohibition of gid hanosha is a mitzvah that is to remind us of our national and spiritual resiliency in the face of all of our challenges. And it's a very important message. We cannot expect to escape our challenges unscathed. Every challenge in life brings injury. Every challenge in life brings some type of wound afterwards. We're not the same people after the challenges. We often walk away limping, but you know what? We still walk away. We still stand our ground. And I believe that that sun will come up. I believe Mashiach, I believe redemption, I believe salvation is on its way. But yet at the same time, in the same moment where I express that strength and resiliency, I express another desire, which is, I wish it would just end. I wish it would just end. Yes, I will stand my ground. And yes, I will not yield, and I will not buckle, and I will not give in. But you know what, Ribono Shel Olam, we're tired. We're really, really tired. And so I'm not going to celebrate my ability to stand my ground in a positive way, because it makes it look like I eagerly anticipate this. I don't eagerly anticipate it. I'd like for the Nisyonos to end, and I'd like for that sun to finally rise. So again, if we bring everything together right now, what we have now is two different dimensions of understanding. According to the first approach, the meaning of the prohibition of Gid Hanash, of sciatic nerve consumption, is related to Yaakov and to Yaakov only. And again, it appears that really it was something that was started by his sons, either again as a way of paying homage to their father's bravery and standing his ground, or by honoring his pain, the handicap that he suffered afterwards, or to be able to constantly remember the fact that they left him alone and the prohibition would make them ever vigilant so as to never leave anyone behind ever again. You should just know this is not a topic for tonight, but this theme of leaving people behind is an ongoing theme throughout the Chumash. Because whenever we fail to think about the other, whenever we leave others behind and just go on our way, that's always when terrible tzaros, terrible difficulties and challenges devolve upon the Jewish people. But Moshe and the Sefer HaChinuch change the conversation. And take this from simply something about Yaakov Avinu to understand that what happened to Yaakov Avinu is an important historical, metaphoric foreshadow for the human condition, or for the condition, for the nature of the condition of the descendants of Yaakov Avinu of Bnei Yisrael. We'll be attacked by the Ish, we'll be attacked in the middle of the night when we are vulnerable, we'll be hurt, but yet what? We'll stand our ground, we won't yield, and we won't be destroyed. We won't emerge unscathed. This is a very important yesod in life in general, is you never emerge from traumatic events unscathed. That is true of personal trauma, it's true of national trauma. Trauma always leaves its mark. It's important to understand that, because people, when they try to recover from traumatic events, personal or national, want to go ahead and live. They want to be able to kind of resume life like they once had it before the trauma, and it's impossible. It doesn't happen. A person has to accept the fact that whenever you undergo a traumatic event, you are now a different person, and the rest of your life will be different. It could be beautiful, and it could be happy, and it could be wonderful, and it could be magnificent, but it's going to be different from the life you had beforehand. That's what the Sefer HaChinuch is telling us. When you struggle with the Ish, either as we do it as a nation, or we do it personally, we end up injured. So we get hurt. And that hurt often remains with us. So the goal is not to try to go ahead and purge the hurt, because that you can't do. The goal is to stand your ground. The goal is don't buckle. The goal is don't yield. So what comes out over here is the Torah is telling us how to deal with trauma. Right? It's amazing. Because again, remember, you could so easily, the Sefer HaChinuch and Rav Moshe are talking about on a national level, but you could so easily personalize the message here. And what the Torah is telling us is when you deal with trauma, again, expect to be injured, but just focus on not buckling. Focus on not yielding your ground. Focus on remaining standing. Sometimes that's all you can do, is just stand your ground and believe that some way, somehow, you're going to make it through. And on a greater religious level, understand that one day, all of that trauma and all of that suffering will come to an end, because the sun does come up, Mashiach will come, salvation will come when we don't know, but I constantly yearn, pine, and believe that that morning will come. But let's take this a little bit further, because there's something interesting. You know, right up until now, we're really looking at just the Gid Hanasha from the Gid Hanasha's perspective. But the truth is, the story that precedes the Gid Hanasha, as we know, is perhaps one of the strangest stories we find in Bereishis. You know, as I often say, when we read these stories, because we're familiar with them, so we don't really have a good, what we'll call reader's objectivity when we look at it. Meaning, imagine you're reading this story for the first time. Yaakov Avinu is coming back to Canaan. He's all alone. We don't even know why he's all alone. For some reason, he's all alone. And some ish starts fighting with him. So you look at this story and you ask yourself, what's going on over here? What a strange and bizarre episode. The Torah gives us absolutely no details. Somebody's just starting up with Yaakov in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night. What's happening here? So that's why, as we mentioned before, if you look at number 8, so the Midrashic approach, which perhaps is the approach most well known, says, Rabbi Chab, Rabbi Chanina, Amar, Soro Shal Esef Haya. As we saw on the Sefer Achinuch beforehand, who is this mysterious ish? Who is this mysterious ish? This mysterious ish is the angel of Esav. Now, I'll whet your appetite a little bit, because it's interesting. You notice, thinking forward to next week's parsha, and not just so forward. Vayeshev, I'm telling you this now, because next week we're not going to do parsha. Next week we're doing Chanukah, Im Yirtzeh Hashem. So I'm going to miss parsha's Vayeshev. But I'll tell you something fascinating, that you'll notice, you look in the Chumash, and when Yaakov tells Yosef to go check on his brothers, they were shepherding the sheep. So Yosef goes ahead and he's looking for his brothers. He can't find his brothers. What happens? What does the Torah say? Vayimtza'ehu ish. He comes across an ish. So I'm not going to tell you what that means. You'll have to figure that out. But I'm just pointing out that you see this mysterious ish. He pops up a couple of times throughout the Bereishis. So that's why, again, everybody's intrigued. Now here, by Yaakov, he's violent. By Yosef, he's helpful. So who is the ish? So again, Medrash says, this ish is the minister. He is helpful. He's helpful in that he gives Yosef the information he's looking for. The fact that it ends Yosef up in a lot of trouble, okay, but Yosef wants to know where my brothers, the ish gives him the answer. So, okay, so the Medrash says, who is the ish? Sarsha Esav. Fine, the ministering angel of Esav. Look at number 9. Rabbi Sachs, in one of his essays, in his book, Covenant and Conversation, he says something amazing. He says, Jacob himself had no doubt it was God. So Rabbi Sachs suggests that the Ish is not the angel of Esav. The Ish is God. He says he called the place of encounter. And now Rabbi Sachs brings actually a good proof to this, because he says he called the place of encounter Piniel. Why? Because I saw God face to face, yet my life was spared. Now, Rabbi Sachs brings a very strong proof. Yaakov Avinu literally says, Ki ra'isi Elokim panim el panim. Quite literally, I saw God. He doesn't say I saw an angel. He said, I saw God face to face. The adversary himself implies as much, when he gives Jacob the name Yisrael, for you have struggled with God and with man and have overcome. Hitherto, we have seen Jacob struggle with human beings, with Esav and Lavan. Now the text seems to suggest he has struggled with God himself. So this is very dramatic. Because now again, according to Rabbi Sachs, which I think really reads very beautifully into the text, it's not an angel, but rather again, it's none other than the Ribono Shel Olam himself, God himself in his full glory, who is physically struggling with Yaakov, which by the way is dramatic by itself. Dramatic by itself because we don't find a divine encounter like this in the rest of Tanakh. We find God speaking to people all the time. We find God communicating with people. We never find physical contact or perceived physical contact between God and another human being except in this particular circumstance. So the question that comes up with the obvious question is why is the Ribono Shel Olam wrestling with Yaakov Avinu. See, I understand. If you tell me, like the Midrashic interpretation, that the Ish is the ministering angel of Esav, so I understand, because again, it's an aggressive situation. It's Esav attacking Yaakov. Okay, I understand that. But if it's God, why is God attacking Yaakov? Why is God wrestling with Yaakov? Look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam in number 10, again, another dramatic idea. The Rashbam writes, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. Now, what the Rashbam is bothered by is, why is Yaakov Avinu by himself? Why is he alone? Kilomar Shehevir Kalashelo, Shelo Hoya Od Lavor Elohu Levado, Virotza Lavor Acharehem, Kilivroach Derech Acheres, Shelo Yifkeshenu Esav Niskaven. Listen to this Rashbam. The Rashbam says everyone thinks that Yaakov Avinu is crossing the Jordan River from outside the land of Israel into Israel. No, that happened already. They crossed the Jordan River. They were already in Israel. What was happening that night? What was happening that night? They were crossing back over. Why is Yaakov Avinu crossing back over the Jordan? Why is he crossing back over the Jordan, says the Rashbam? Because he has a change of heart. I'm not going to confront Esav. I'm going to run. I'm going to run. We prepared ourselves for confrontation. Changed my mind. Kilivroach derech acheres. Second line in number 10. Kilivroach derech acheres. Yaakov Avinu decides, I do not want confrontation with Esav. I want to run away. Shelo yifgeshenu Esav niskaven. Yaakov Avinu decides, nope. Scrap the plans. We're running. Crosses the Jordan, not from Chutzlar, it's not from diaspora, not from outside the land of Israel, into Israel, but again, just the opposite. He's already in Israel, and then the night before the fateful encounter, he's crossing back out. So what happens? This is Rashbam, last line, number 10. So what happens? As he's moving the family out of Israel to run away from Esav, Vayeavek. Who fights with him? Now, the Rashbam is of the opinion that it's the Malach. Malachimo, Shelo Yuchal Livroach. Why does the angel, or according to Rabbi Sachs, why does God fight with Yaakov the entire night? For what purpose? To prevent him from running away. V'yirakim haftachoso shalakadosh baruch hu shelo yazikei Esav. So now this is like mind blowing. So now over here, what's unfolding over here is the following. Everyone thinks that it's just the Sarosh Esav, the ministering angel of Esav, as the aggressor trying to attack Yaakov. You know, says Rashbam, that's actually not what's happening. If we bring the Rashbam and Rabbi Sachs together, we emerge with a mind-blowing understanding of the narrative. Yaakov Avinu, just hours before the fateful encounter with Esav, has had a change of heart. Flight. I gotta run. I have to get out of here. We have to cross back over the Jordan and put as much distance between us and Esav as possible. And what happens? What happens again after he's already crossed everyone over? He's the last man who just has to cross over. Vayeavek ish imo. God begins to wrestle with him. Why does God begin to wrestle with him? Because at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want Yaakov to run. Another interesting point with this, we'll see why. Look at number 11. So this is from a very interesting sefer called The Rav, Thinking Aloud on the Parsha, Rabbi David Holzer, who put together some of the ideas of Rav Soloveitchik on the Parsha. So he writes over here, The Rav explained that in the end, Yaakov never divides the camp because the Malach delayed him, so he didn't have time. This is why Vayisa'ina v'hine Esav, he lifted his eyes and Esav was upon him. The reason Hashem sent the Malach was because it wasn't proper what Yaakov planned to do. Al Pidin, according to the letter of the Lord, is not right to sacrifice one machaneh so the other may live. So you see what's amazing over here? So meaning Yaakov had all these plans. He was going to split the camps, right? Because split the camps, remember this way, if Esav attacks one, the other could flee and survive. And then he decides he's going to run away. And what happens? God wrestles with Yaakov the entire night to prevent Yaakov from doing any of these things. So Yaakov doesn't run away, can't run away, he's wrestling the whole night. Yaakov never splits the camps, right? Isn't that interesting? We often assume that, of course, he split the camps. He said he was going to split the camps. Even though Torah doesn't tell us that he actually split them, we just automatically take for granted that he carried through on his plan. The Rav says, no, that's the whole point. Yaakov, what did you do last night? Oh, I was wrestling with God. Right? So again, when you are wrestling with God, it doesn't leave time for anything else. See, he couldn't run. He couldn't divide up the camp. So essentially, according to Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Sullivan, and the Rashbam, what comes out over here is the Ribono Shel Olam wrestles with Yaakov Avinu the entire night until daybreak. So essentially, there's no time for Yaakov to do anything but what? But what? But confront and meet Esav. There's no time to run. There's no time to split the camp. There's only time to confront. What's happening here? Why does Ribono Shel Olam need to? Why does he need to prevent Yaakov Avinu from running? Look at number 12. So, you know, somebody, I never appreciated this pasuk until somebody pointed it out to me last week. This, look at number 12. Vayignov Yaakov eslev Lavan. Remember, this is when Yaakov Avinu already spent a good number of years at the house of Lavan. He has already his 11 sons, one daughter, and he decides that it is time to go back to Canaan. So how does he leave Lavan's house? Vayignov leiv Lavan ha'aram. He stole Lavan's heart. Ad beli hi gidlo ki boreachu. Without what? Without telling Lavan that he was leaving. Because again, essentially, he was just running away. Now, what's intriguing about this pasuk? What's intriguing about it? He told Lavan beforehand that he wanted to go. Correct. He did make that intention known. But what's interesting about the phraseology? Vayignov, is that a positive expression? It does not sound like a positive expression. Meaning, it's almost as if the Torah is editorializing and telling us, by the way, wrong move. Wrong move. You don't have to sneak out at night when no one is looking. So you see something very interesting. We begin to see a pattern of behavior. We begin to see the same Yaakov who ran away from home at the end of last week's parsha. Now granted, that was because his mother told him to do so. But now again, the same Yaakov, that when he leaves Lavan's house, he doesn't say, Lavan, I'm Yaakov, I'm an adult, I make my own decisions, I'm one of the patriarchs, I'm leaving. He runs away under the cover of darkness. Same Yaakov, who is ready now to go ahead and what? Who's ready now to go ahead and meet Esav, and what does he decide to do the night before? Run away. What's happening over here? Take a look at 13. So I think what's unfolding over here is the following. Remember when we're first introduced to Yaakov Avinu, the Torah says, Vayigdol ha'arim. This is Esav and Yaakov get older. Vayi Esav ish yodei tzayit ish sadeh. Esav is a hunter, a man of the field. V'Yaakov ish tam yoshev o'alim. And Yaakov was, now how do we translate tam? Right? Tam is one of those interesting words. Simple, see, some people translate it as perfect. Definitely does not mean perfect. No one's perfect. Simple, complete, pure, honest. I think you know what else it means. Yaakov, you know, is Yoshev Olam. Yoshev Olam means he was a tent dweller. If you're a tent dweller, then what do you have very little of? So, all right, so social skills, but I would say a little bit differently. Human interaction. Human interaction. You're not really like a people person. You're not a people person, right? He's dwelling in the tents of Torah. And again, that's why I just want to point out, Yaakov Avinu, there's only one of the patriarchs was a real people person, and that was Avram Avinu. Yitzchak was not. And even Yaakov was Yoshev Olam. Or perhaps for our purposes, you know, Yaakov Avinu was what we would call conflict averse. There are some people, again, that just have absolutely no interest in butting heads with others. Some people who have just have no interest. Now, again, I want to point out, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. You know, there are some people that love conflict. That's terrible. But some people, mamish, are conflict averse to a fault. To a fault. That they just simply don't want to get into any level. You have to understand, in life, there are times where conflict is necessary. In life, there are times that you have to take a stand. In life, there are times that you have to make enemies. Yaakov Avinu, who is the Ishtam Yoshev Olim, is absolutely conflict averse. So what happens when he has to leave Lavan's home? What happens? Now remember again, let's be fair. Yaakov Avinu did tell Lavan, I'm going, right? And what happens? What happens when he tells Lavan, I'm going? So Laban says, sure, wonderful, you've been so wonderful to me. And then what happens? As Yaakov Avinu's possessions begin to grow, Laban becomes very hostile. A little bit more, I guess, what we call like passive-aggressive. Laban wasn't like directly, it was a little bit more passive-aggressive hostility. But he was hostile towards him. So Yaakov says, whoa, I don't want anything to do with hostility. I have absolutely no interest in conflict. Therefore, Vayignov Yaakov eslev Laban ha'arami ad belihi gidlo, ki boreachu. He runs. So too again, night before the conflict with Esav, he prepared himself the whole day before. Prayer, war, gifts, I'm ready. And then night before, what does he say? Not interested. I'm the ish tam yoshev olam. So watch this. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I mean, there are a few Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos. But look at number 14. This is the first Mishnah in the fourth chapter. Perek Dal Mishnah Aleph. Ben Zoma Omer. Ben Zoma says, Eizohi Gibor, this is something we all know, who is strong? Hakovesh es Yitzro. How would you translate that? One who conquers his inclinations, or perhaps better than conquers, is captures or subdues. A person who is strong, a person who is able to subdue his yetzer, to subdue his inclinations. Shneamar quotes the pasuk from Mishlei, Tov erech apayim Gibor. A person who is patient and slow to anger is even better than someone who is strong. Umoshal beruchan, someone who is able to rule over his spirit, is stronger milokeid ir than someone who is able to conquer a city. And the Rabbeinu Yonah writes that very often, it's number 50, I'm just going to tell you, it's outside, that very often we assume that the true measure of a person's strength is their physical abilities, their physical prowess. And if Ben Zoma says, not true, the real measure of your strength is your spiritual mettle. But let me ask you, whenever, and we're all familiar with this phrase, Ezu Gibar Kovesh es Yitzro, Yitzro refers to what? Yetzer Hara. In fact, if you look, take a look at number 16, so Tosas Yom Tov writes, HaKovesh es Yitzro, Yetzer Hara. This refers to the evil inclination, Nikra Yetzer Stam. Now, this is actually interesting. So the Tosas Yom Tov says that whenever you see Yetzer unqualified, it always means Yetzer Hara. This is why? Because the Yetzer Hara, we have a Yetzer Hara before we have a Yetzer HaTov, which is another discussion, not for tonight. But the Yetzer Hara is there almost like innately from the time we come into this world, and the Yetzer HaTov is acquired later on in life. Therefore, says the Tosas Yom Tov, which is the simplest of the way we understand this Mishnah, Ezu Gibor, who is strong, a person who is able to contain, maintain, and ultimately subdue his or her evil inclination. But then the Tosas Yom Tov says something incredible. He says, number 17, Va'od, perish. Another explanation is, Shehu Yitzro HaMiyuchad Lo. That what does it refer to? What does Yetzer refer to? Not Yetzer Hara. It means the Yetzer, the inclination or disposition or proclivity that is unique to you. Each of us are born with certain dispositions. Each of us are born with certain proclivities. Each of us are born with what we call a certain netiya, a certain orientation. So the classic example of this, who do we have the classic example of this in Tanakh? In Tanakh? Esav, right? What does the Torah say about Esav? That Esav was born admoni, ruddy complexion. And again, Rashi says, what does it symbolize? Killing. But guess who else was born as an admoni? David HaMelech. Right, King David also had a ruddy complexion, just like Esav. So what does that mean? David, Esav, same ruddiness, same admoni. The answer is that both David and Esav were born with a predisposition or a proclivity or a disposition for certain character traits. Yes, they were both David and Esav shed an incredible amount of blood. But the difference is that Esav shed blood as a murderer and a hunter, and David HaMelech shed blood as a warrior and ultimately as a king for the Jewish people. So what the Tosfos Yom Tov is saying is something amazing. That each of us are born with a Yetzer. We're born with a Netiyah, with a proclivity, a disposition. And a person has to be so careful. Because sometimes it's those very innate dispositions that handicap us in life. What is Yaakov Avinu's innate disposition? What's his innate disposition? He's a Tam. He's a Tam. He's conflict averse. He is absolutely, he's a mild-mannered guy. A mild-mannered individual. Pleasure to be around. Nice, sweet, kind, Lesu has absolutely no interest, Lesu, in any kind of machlokes. That's his yetzer. That's his predisposition. That's his proclivity. That's his netia. And what happens? But there are times in life where that very yetzer, that proclivity, that predisposition handicaps me. You see, Yaakov Avinu's greatest weakness was what? Was that he didn't confront. Was that he did not go ahead and stare his challenges straight in the eye. How should Yaakov Avinu have dealt with Lavan? Don't be chutzpahdik. Don't be nasty. Don't get into a fight. But be self-assured about who you are. You don't have to run under the cover of darkness. Esav is coming to meet you with 400 men. You are a patriarch. You are an Av. You are part of a destiny. Straighten yourself up and meet him. So what's unfolding over here is something so amazing. Yaakov's greatest handicap is his very netzer, is his very nature, is his very predisposition. Sometimes, interestingly enough, it's not our yetzer hara that is the problem. It's not a yetzer hara, because very often, we're good people, I can get my yetzer hara under control. You know what a bigger challenge than my yetzer hara is? A bigger challenge than my yetzer hara are almost like my innate characteristics. So sometimes a person has a bad temper. Sometimes a person has a short fuse. Sometimes a person doesn't have enough courage. Sometimes a person, everybody has these predispositions for things that in a vacuum are not good or bad. They just are. So Ben Zoma says, according to Tosfos Yom Tov, Ezehu Gibor, if you really want to be strong, you have to rein in your predispositions. You have to look at some of the character traits that may define you and ask yourself, are they helping you or are they handicapping you? Yaakov Avinu wants again to run away. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yaakov wants to run. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do to Yaakov Avinu? What does he do? He doesn't just wrestle him. What does he do? He injures the Gid Hanosha. Remember again, we spoke about the sciatic nerve, right? If a person's ever suffered from sciatica, right? So it could be one of the most debilitating pains. Why? Because as I said before, the sciatic nerve, remember, is the widest, longest nerve in the human body, lower back, all the way through the foot. Pain, if the pain is acute enough, it could literally paralyze you. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu go ahead and injure Yaakov Avinu Dafka? Dafka, specifically in the Gid Hanosha? Because what was he telling Yaakov? Don't run. You can't run. That at some point in time, you're going to have to find the courage to stand tall and confront. You can't live your life running from your challenges. You can't, yes, nobody wants conflict, but you know what? You can't always be conflict averse. Sometimes you have to get into the machlokas. Sometimes you have to get after butt heads. Sometimes you have to be ready to go to war. Sometimes you have to engage in the conflict. My dear Yaakov, you're so special. You're so holy. And can you imagine this? Yaakov is trying to, and the Ribonos Olam, literally, just to show you, by the way, how much sometimes, how strong we could be, strong-willed in a negative way. It takes God an entire night to subdue Yaakov Avinu. Can you imagine? This is the Ribonos Olam. Obviously, God could have done it, I'm sure, in a shorter amount of time, but he's trying to make a point. Yaakov struggles the entire night because he wants nothing more than to run. I don't want to confront. And the Kadosh Baruch says, I'm sorry, Yaakov. Ezehu Gibor. Your yetzer, your predisposition, you're an ishtam, you're a nice guy, you're quiet, you live in the tents of Torah, you're conflict averse. That's a nice trait sometimes. But other times, you have to be brave, you have to be courageous, you have to be willing to confront. And so he keeps Yaakov in place, so he can't run away, he can't split the camps, and literally, he removes from Yaakov Avinu the literal ability to go ahead and run. And now we come to the amazing conclusion, which is, now we understand the mitzvah of Gid Hanosha. What is the mitzvah of Gid Hanosha? So the truth is, for most of us, the mitzvah of Gid Hanosha has absolutely no applicability. The only person I know, Rani Matyas, deals with Gid Hanosha, right? Otherwise, unless you are a butcher or a shochet or someone else, you're never going to see a Gid Hanosha. So what's the point of the mitzvah? The point that the mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to convey to us is, go back to number one for just a moment. So look at the dramatic lashon. Look at the last phrase, the last pasuk in number one. Al kein, Alkein, therefore, lo yochlu bnei Yisrael es gid hanosha. The Jewish people cannot eat the gid hanosha. Asher al kaf hayarach, that was on the hip of the socket of the hip, the hip socket. Adayom hazeh. Kinaga bekaf yarech Yaakov gid hanosha. Why can't we eat it? You know why you can't eat the gid hanosha? You know what the message of gid hanosha is? You can't run from your problems. You can't run from your challenges. That is the take-home message of Gid Hanasha. You have to confront. You have to find the strength to stand your ground, and you have to find the strength to stare your troubles right, your challenges, right in the eye. You could run, but you could only run for so long. Al came. Therefore, because God had to hold Yaakov in place the entire night, had to hurt him in the Genosh that he couldn't run, the eternal message for us is we too cannot run from our challenges. We too cannot run from our problems, but we must find the courage to literally stand in place as if I don't have a Gid Hanasha, as if I can't move because my sciatic nerve is immobilized. I have to find the courage to stand in place and to be able to confront. So we emerge, therefore, from this little pasuk, this mitzvah, that for most of us we didn't think held too much contemporary meaning. And we emerge with two beautiful lessons. One, a national lesson, and really two personal lessons. The national lesson is, Esav, the Saroshal Esav, the Ish, will always try to injure us, and will always try to hurt us when we are most vulnerable. And we will be hurt, and we will be maimed, and we will be limping. But the amazing part is, we'll still be standing. And the amazing part also is that one day, all of that limping will come to an end, because one day the sun, S-U-N, the Shemesh of Mashiach, will rise and will stop the pain and will heal the suffering that we have already endured. That's lesson one. Lesson number two, which again, from the same Sefer Achinuch, when a person endures trauma, when a person endures traumatic activity, it's important to understand that even if a person remains standing, a person's always limping, trauma changes us. Right? I can't go back to the same life as the pre-trauma life. That's not my goal. My goal is to use my strength to remain standing, to not yield to the difficulties and turbulence in front of me. And lesson number three is that we have certain predispositions that compromise our ability to self-actualize. Very often it's human nature not to confront, but to run. Either because, like Yaakov Avinu, we're conflict-averse, or simply because we don't want to deal with many of our challenges. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us, Al Kain lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael skid hanasha. The same way that God had to wrestle with Yaakov the whole night and keep him in place to force him to confront his challenges, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, for all generations, we too may not eat the Gid Hanasha. We remove a certain degree of mobility from our lives as well to encourage us, to bolster us, to give us the faith and courage in ourselves to be able to confront and to stare down all of our challenges. We'll stop over here for tonight. And Yiratz Hashem, next week, we'll be doing a Hanukkah theme. I don't know what yet, but something related to Hanukkah, Yiratz Hashem. Again, same time, 8 o'clock Wednesday nights. Have a good evening. There's Marav in the base medrash. Starting in 2 minutes.
Thank you. Pleasure.